Yes, you are. Hey, guys, it's Lavetta.
And it's Miriam.
And welcome to the Notorious Women Podcast, a comedy podcast about some of history's most notorious women.
Yes, yes.
Yes. How are you this week, my darling?
Listen, I'm not okay, but I'll be fine. By the time this drops, my children are in a variety show.
Uh-oh.
I'm not done. They had an orchestra concert. I'm not done. They also were in this like little cute little show, like where they, okay, like little musical theater. It was like 20 minutes. I also directed it. Okay, stop. I'm famous.
Oh.
Right. It's been a couple of weeks. It's been busy. Ooh. Yeah. So thank you for listening to me. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Good luck with that.
Thank you.
Yeah. But it's so cute. That's why they make little kitties so cute.
I know.
So you don't strangle them in their sleep or give them back to the stork.
No, they wouldn't take refunds, actually. No.
Well, you know what? We will not keep our listeners waiting for too long. I think we should get started because I have a slightly long one today, long lady that I want to cover. And I believe I'm first this week.
Okay.
And hopefully, and if you guys have not downloaded or shared our podcast, please do so.
Yes.
Please like us, subscribe on all the things.
Pretty please.
Share us and engage. Come to IG and TikTok and engage and leave comments and
If you engage, then I can talk to you back and then it's less of me just like doom scrolling and more of me just like engaging with people I like. So please to do that. Thank you.
Yeah. Please to do that. And if you're watching this on YouTube, again, like, subscribe, and tell us how pretty and wonderful because it's compliments are always welcome.
It doesn't hurt nobody,
No.
I know why I'm Southern today. I don't know why I'm Southern. What happened?
I tell you, boy, don't let me get out my Southern accent.
Wow. I am no longer Southern,
boy. Foghorn Leghorn. Look it up.
You know, right? We're so old.
It's the best. Still gets me every time. So I believe I'm first today.
Yes.
So my notorious woman this week is... Okay. Let me before...
I'm like taking a breath. I'm nervous.
So you know how we're trying to figure out which one we're going to cover because there's so many women and you should listen to all of them. Go back to our back catalog for this International Women's Day that we're actually recording this on, but it's Women's Month, Women's
That's
History
right.
Month this month. So, but I, I'm a hottie. I'm a Meg Thee Stallion fan.
Mm.
That's my girl.
That's right.
So she has this one song called Anxiety where she talks about the chorus is something like bad bitches have bad days too, but you always bounce back. But there's this one line where she's like, my favorite hoe. I think she's the baddest. I think she's the goat. And I'm always like, is she the goat? And so who she's talking about in that line is my notorious woman today, who I have a very complicated, complicated feelings around her whole like persona and her legacy in a lot of ways. And that is the Marilyn Monroe. I have a very like whenever people are like Marilyn Monroe, and so the line is Marilyn Monroe, my favorite hoe. I think she's the baddest. I think she's the goat.
So
and I'm just like, is Marilyn the goat? Like, so that I'm covering today.
I always learn stuff because I want to be like, no, I love her, but then I was like, I obviously don't really know anything about her. But I'm about to learn.
It's a lot of, she's obviously a major icon, cultural icon all over the world, but it's, a Hollywood icon from the 50s mainly. And so Elton John has a famous song about her.
Yep.
And so her persona, people know who she is, but I think we just don't. I think now in the more recent world and the way we think about mental health and trauma, yeah. you know, people have a more realistic view of her. But I have a very complicated feeling, like just emotions around her legacy. So let's get into it. So, so Marilyn Monroe, many of you know, was born Norma Jean Mortensen.
Goodbye, so she was Norma Jean.
No, exactly.
I knew that because of the song. That's it.
It's so funny doing the research. I kept having that Elton John song in my head because I love Elton John.
Probably hours in your head.
Yeah. So she was born Norma Jean Mortensen on June 1st, 1926 in Los Angeles. I did not know that.
I actually didn't know that either.
Yeah. Okay. To a woman named Gladys Pearl Baker, who was a single mother at the time, and who was from a very poor Midwestern family who migrated to California at the turn of the century.
Okay.
So at age 15, Gladys, so it's a little bit about her mother because this sort of sets up her, you know, her background and stuff. At age 15, her mother, Gladys, was married.
Oh,
let
God.
Let that sink in.
Oh.
Yeah.
15.
Yeah.
No.
To
I mean,
a man
yes,
who.
But no.
Yeah. To a man named John Newton Baker, who was 9 years her senior. So this man is 24. She's 15.
He's a pedophile. That's a pedophile.
You know, he's also very abusive, of course. Yeah. Big surprise there.
Tracks.
You know. Yep. Now, she had, so Norma Jean's mother had two children with this man. A child named Robert and Bernice. And obviously, he was very abusive. The fact that she was able to get a divorce from him was really remarkable even during that time. So she was able, Gladys was able to divorce him and get sole custody of their two eldest children. Can you hear me still?
I can hear you.
Okay, yeah. I don't know, some glitchy thing. But anyway, so back to Gladys. So Gladys was able to get a divorce from John, get sole custody of their two children. But abusive men being assholes, he kidnapped the children and took them back to Kentucky.
What an asshole. He's an asshole.
So following the divorce.
He's a criminal and an asshole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, you know, this is where we need to have the law in and giving women recourse. And they just didn't. And this is what we're trying to avoid going back to. Let me get off my soapbox. Mm-hmm. But we're just trying to avoid going back to this kind of circumstance that leads to this kind of crap. Right.
Yep.
So Gladys now on her own is trying to figure out how. So her two babies have been stolen from her.
Yes. Ugh.
Okay. So this is 1923. So she basically gets back up and tries to dust herself off. She has to make a living. She doesn't come from money.
Right.
And she began working as a film negative cutter.
Okay.
Because back then they used to have, you have to actually cut the film. Yeah. Yeah. Now, the following year, 1923, because a lot of times women used marriage and coupling up to survive.
Oh,
they
my
could
God.
Not make enough money.
Easily.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So she married a man named Martin Edward Mortensen, but they separated just months after that and then divorced a couple years, actually 4 years later, 1928. But they separated basically. Now, you're probably wondering, Norma Jean, let's go back to Norma Jean. Was Martin Gladys' second husband, Norma Jean's husband, father?
That is my question.
No.
Oh,
okay. And even at the time, Gladys was not forthcoming about who Norma Jean's father was. She marries this man in 24. They separate 9 months later. So 1925, and then Norma Jean's born in 1926. What's going on? So technically, she was still married to Martin, even though they were separated. But she never told anyone who Norma Jean's father was.
So she never found out who her actual father was?
No.
Wow.
Her mother would tell her, reportedly her mother told her that her father was the owner or the son of the owner of the place that she worked at, which is a place called Consolidated Film Industry. So a rich man who was married. But little Norma Jean never really knew who her father was.
That's crazy. Okay?
Yeah. So, but despite this, the two, when she was born, you know, her mother doted on her. Gladys doted on Norma Jean. And her mother had a really good girlfriend that she used to go out with. And they would go to the movies. And Norma Jean remembers going to the movies all the time during this time. Again, they're in California, in Hollywood, when, like, the movies are really, really, like, starting up. Like, when they transition from silent to talkies, you know.
Oh, right.
So they're there in the middle of it. Yeah. Yeah. So she and her mother loved Jean Harlow. For those of you who don't know.
Yes.
Jean Harlow was the first blonde bombshell of the movies. And she died, you know, we might cover her on another episode. But so she was a big, and she was known as a platinum blonde also. Mm. So she's the first blonde bombshell. But again, despite all of this, Norma Jean remembers being pretty happy, you know, when she was very, very little. But also, Gladys didn't tell her that she had two half siblings from the first marriage.
Oh.
She didn't know about these other children until she was 12. Norma Jean didn't know until she was 12.
That's great. Can you imagine finding out? That's intense.
I have a brother and a sister? Like, what? And then she didn't get to meet them until she was like 17 or 18.
Wow.
So it's just a lot of like this kind of stuff. Children, even if you're not telling them, they don't feel like they're being really cared for.
They know. They know something's up. Yeah.
So as far as Gladys, some people speculate that she had some mental health issues. And frankly, she was just financially unprepared for a child.
Yeah.
And again, despite this, Norma Jean remembers her early, early childhood feeling stable. Even if she had to sometimes live with other caregivers, you know, that her mother would place her with if she was unable to take care of her. Maybe she had to work and the work schedule was not conducive to looking after a little one. So, but in the summer of 1933, so little Norma Jean is what? She is six. Gladys bought a small house in Hollywood with a loan from the Homeowners Loan Corporation. See, this is why people getting access to loans create stability.
Uh-huh.
So she and little Norma Jean moved in and they shared the house with lodgers. So there were some lodgers there to help pay the mortgage. Actors by the name of George and Maude Atkinson and their daughter, Nellie.
Okay.
So in 1934, unfortunately, Gladys just had a mental breakdown and she was diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia.
Ooh. I wonder what that's called now. You know how they change the names of things?
Yeah.
Like bipolar maybe or.
Yeah. But that's paranoid schizophrenia is pretty serious. And it takes like strong medication even by today's standards. Yeah. So now and then she was admitted to a rest home. After the rest home, several months of being there, she was committed to the Metropolitan State Hospital, where she spent the rest of her life.
What?
In and out of hospitals.
Yeah, I didn't know this.
Yeah. Now, before this, though, Gladys, remember Norma Jean's like, I remember, you know, going to the movies with my mom and her friend. And so Gladys had a best friend by the name of Grace Goddard. So they were like girlfriends. You know, they hung out together. They worked together. They hung out. They, you know, they went to movies and that kind of stuff. So every woman needs a friendship.
Friend. So
at that point, Norma Jean became a ward of the state after her mother was committed. And, you know, but her mother's friend, Grace, took over responsibility for little Norma Jean and her mother's affair. So little Norma Jean's like 7, 8 years old. This is happening. And, you know, Grace comes in. So now over the next 4 years, Norma Jean's living situation changed often. So she's going back and forth between different places where reportedly she was probably sexually abused.
Oof.
That's more than likely. She was already a shy girl. And imagine being, you know, separated from your mother, like so traumatically, and then you're having all these things happen. And so she became very, very shy and withdrawn. And at one point she developed a stutter.
So she was with the friend, but then the friend couldn't keep her full time.
Yeah, it because again, Grace is also a young woman.
Okay.
Who may or may not be married.
Okay.
Or looking for a husband.
So who doesn't have any money. Drop her off at friends' houses and.
And yeah. The Atkinsons, the former people who, the former yeah. lodgers would also look after little Norma Jean.
Okay.
But if they're working, they have their own child. Ugh. It's just taking on a child is a lot of responsibility.
I mean, it is.
You know. So, and unfortunately, and then she would go to orphanages. So I'm not going to get too much into that, but she was just shuttled back and forth between a lot of different places, including an orphanage. And then at one point, Grace let her live with her because Grace became her legal guardian in 1936.
Okay.
But, and took her out of the orphanage because she comes to live with Grace. Then Grace has to kind of like do some things. So Grace drops her off at an orphanage. She feels abandoned. Then the Goddards probably come in. I mean, then the Atkinsons probably come in. Look, so they're all just trying to figure out what to do with this child.
Okay.
She's feeling abandoned. Where's yeah. my mother?
She's What's like getting abandoned on? And then abandoned again.
Yeah.
You know what I
and
mean?
And then sexually abused and molested.
Oh my God.
Including okay. allegedly by Grace's eventual husband.
Grace, girl, come on.
Who Grace may or may not know that that happened, but it's just so this is why you need to protect children.
Yeah.
This is why they need to be around people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and at one point, Grace even had her took her to live with her older aunt, a woman by the name of Aunt Anna.
Okay.
And that was in 1938. And then around that time, she got a little bit more stability. She started going to school. She came out of being shy. The stutter went away.
Oh, good.
She worked on the school newspaper. She loved writing.
Okay.
But that wouldn't last because Anna was elderly and began to have even more health problems. So she ended up back at Grace's house in 1941.
So she's like a teenager now.
Yeah. So from 8 to about 15, all of this is going on. This is a lot.
That's a lot.
So basically the second half of her life, it's just chaos, turmoil, all this stuff. And her mother's in and out of the hospital, mental hospital, and she doesn't really see her that much. And all this stuff is going on, right? And then this is in early 1941. But that year, and she began attending high school. But then that year, Grace's husband, his job relocated him out of town. And the state law prohibited them from taking a child out of the state. So Grace kind of came to her and was like, okay, we can't take you with you. And I can only imagine little Norma Jean just feeling like a burden on people and being like, well, like she's like 15 at this time. Like, well, why can't I go with you? Well, we can't go with you. We can't take you. And not understanding that and really feeling like a burden and abandoned. So Grace has a solution, though. She's like, why don't you marry the cute guy?
Okay.
Cute son of our neighbor.
Mm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, her mother was married at 15. Norma Jean's
right.
mother, Gladys. Right. So that's what Norma Jean didn't want to do that, of course.
Right.
This guy, thank God, was only 21. He's still too old.
Still too old. Still not okay.
Yeah. So that's what she did. She married 21-year-old factory worker James Doherty on June 19th, 1942, just after her 16th birthday.
Oh, 16. Well, she's an old lady at this point.
Yeah.
Dude,
and now that she's
we need to like highlight this shit. This shit was like relatively normalized. The fact that they had a relatively normal conversation about it is a problem. Okay.
Yep. So she married James in 1942, and she's married now. So what does a young married woman do? She drops out of high school and becomes a full-time housewife.
I have so many feelings right now.
Yeah.
Mm.
So James, the following year, he was one of those guys that are like, yeah, I'm a man. Nah, 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 nah. So she tries to do what she thinks a housewife at 16 is supposed to be doing. And obviously he's a factory worker. They don't have a lot of money.
Right.
So he enlists in the Merchant Marine and he gets stationed to Santa Catalina Island, where they move into a home together.
They live in Santa Catalina Island?
Yeah.
A tiny little island.
But yeah, a year after that, though, however, he was shipped out to the Pacific. So okay, again, right. We're in World War II. So we're in World War II. Yep.
Should remember that.
Where he goes out to the Pacific. He's shipped out for a year after that. So they get married in 42. So in 43, he's shipped out.
Okay.
And all of a sudden, she's alone now. Thank God she has a place to live because she's living with his in-laws. Who knows how that went? It sounds like they were not thrilled to have a mouth to feed. Because these are all like working class people who need to work to eat.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. But it's the height of the war. So there are a bunch of jobs. And she becomes basically a Rosie the Riveter. She gets a job at the radio plane company, a munitions factory in Van Nuys. Now, so she's there, and by all accounts, she kind of liked it being, you know, a lot of the women report from that time liking going to work and getting paid and getting money.
I'm sorry. Are you saying that women enjoy working and getting paid for the labor that they do?
Yeah.
As women, they have breasts and vaginas and everything?
Yeah.
I don't understand. Yeah. They're lady brains.
Wow. Because now there's work. And also what's going on this time, you know, you have to build morale. So,
right.
So from the studios, and the studios all into this, they have their big stars. Everybody's trying to get morale up. They're raising money with war bonds, all that kind of stuff. So the president of the Screen Actors Guild, Ronald Reagan, he sends out a photographer by the name of David Conover, who to basically go out and scout, take pictures of pretty girls, factory workers, just to get the morale up. So he comes to the radio plane company and he takes pictures of a whole bunch of young women that they think would be good. And even though they didn't use any of Norma Jean's pictures, David tells her, he's like, I actually think that you would be like really good with modeling. So he, through his connections, he actually introduces her to a modeling agency, and she signs a contract with the Blue Book Model Agency in 1945.
Okay.
Okay.
And her husband's still at war.
Her husband's still at war.
Okay, good.
Like a lot of the women who are, she's probably working with. Now,
he's out of the way. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. So the modeling agency is like, now at this time, she had more of a brownish kind of hair, brownish reddish kind of hair. And she, by all accounts, she was a very voluptuous young girl. She looked very, it's so funny because they thought she would be great for pinup because she, more than high fashion, because she looked very natural and all American, quote unquote. Right?
Yeah.
A natural beauty, which is so interesting because of what happens later on.
Hilarious.
But, so immediately she's booked a lot for these kinds of things. And the president of the owner of the agency, a woman by the name of Emmeline Snively, she starts booking her and she likes her because Norma Jean is really taken to this. Like, can you imagine a girl who actually has a purpose because she's been trotted around her whole life, place to place, and now she actually has purpose.
Right.
She has this new budding beauty, but she's, you know, that age, young women are starting to come into something like, oh, I might be good at something.
Right.
And her fondest memories of her and her mother are them going to the movies and hanging out.
Yeah.
Right. And seeing Jean Harlow on the screen. Those are some of her fondest memories.
Yeah.
So this is like, oh, okay. So this is an avenue. And she booked in 1946, by early 1946, she had appeared on 33 magazine covers.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
And she would occasionally. And her name's Norma Jean. So that even sounds very all American, right? At this time, she would occasionally at this time use the pseudonym Jean Norman. You know, she's just sort of playing around with the name.
Yeah.
So now through Emmeline, who was like, oh, you're doing well. You're successful. Why don't we see if you can get into acting? Because, again, this is the studio system. This is the heyday of this. So through her agent's contact, she was able to sign a contract so they sent her out to Paramount. That did not go well.
Really?
So then she went over to 20th Century Fox and she was actually given a screen test. So once you get to that screen test, they're like, oh, okay, to see if you have potential to go into their, basically their group of actors that they then sent to acting school, elocution, mm-hmm. all of this to see if you would be, you know, if you could turn into a star.
First, you have to be pretty enough.
You have to be pretty enough.
Then you need to be able to speak kind of okay. Then if you can speak like a little bit more than okay, they'll teach you how to act.
Yes.
Got it.
That's how it worked.
That's the journey. Right. Okay.
And basically you get signed to a contract and they pay you like, you know, $25 a week, $100 a week. Let's say they pay you, if you're lucky, you get by today's standards, $550 a week, $600 a week, right? It's not a lot. It's enough to live off of technically, but it's not really. It's barely enough,
You can eat, you can find a cheaper place to live and be okay, but you need to grow. Yeah.
And of course, they have contacts with like places to live and like, but you're going to, the whole idea is to free up your time so you can go to acting school,
right.
Dance classes full time to get better, right? So she does the screen test for 20th Century Fox. Head executive, Daryl Zanuck, very, very famous, important figure in old Hollywood. He was like, but he gave her the standard 6-month contract.
Okay.
Because he didn't want her to be signed by rival studio RKO Pictures.
Oh.
So 6 months. This is very standard. She's actually lucky because a lot of young women don't even get the 6-month contract.
Yeah.
So this is where her slow transformation into from wholesome looking PYT, pretty young thing, to the icon that we come to know, but the transformation is slow at this point. So again, this is 1946. Okay. So the war just ended. Now, I have a feeling that because she was a popular pinup figure, that sort of like, oh, let's see. Because the pinup is slowly dying down in that sense, at least the height of it in during World War II. So this is, at this point, they try and figure out, so she signed this contract with since the 20th Century Fox, so they're like, well, we got to come up with a stage name, because this Norma Jean ain't going to do it.
And right.
So she gets with this man by the name of, he was basically the head of casting there, last name, by the name of Lyon. So he's just like, they're coming up with things. He's like, what's your mother's name? They're trying to come up with something.
Right.
So he said that Norma Jean reminded him of a Broadway star by the name of Marilyn Miller.
Okay.
And so he's like, what about Marilyn? Marilyn Miller, but there's always a Marilyn Miller, but I like that MM, right? And so she's like, well, my mother's maiden name is Monroe. So they're like, that's it. Marilyn Monroe.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Side note.
Yeah.
I just realized last year that Cary Grant got his name probably because Clark Gable, because Clark Gable was the king of Hollywood for so long.
Yes.
And I bet you they came up with Cary Grant because of CG.
I bet you that's true. And I just realized right now that I mix up Cary Grant and Clark Gable in my brain place all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, okay. Because it hit me one day. I don't know. I was like, oh, that's probably where they got Cary Grant for. Anyway, I don't know. But anyway, so back to now Marilyn Monroe, Norma Jean now, who's become Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah.
So she's off to, you know, acting. She's actually very, very excited because despite what people, her long-term iconic persona is, she was very ambitious.
Yeah.
She's a very ambitious young woman. And she not only was interested in being in front of the camera, but she wanted to know how everything worked. How did the lighting work? How do you set up a camera? Like, she was interested in the technical stuff as well.
That's awesome.
So she's just actually happy as a pig and shit. Like, she's just like, this is the greatest thing. And she's not wrong, right? This is the greatest thing. My whole life is ahead of me. Again, she's what? 18?
I think based on,
she's
yeah,
like 18.
18-ish sounds right.
18, yeah. 19. So she is so, like, she's in the best place, right?
Yeah.
But then her husband comes home.
Oh, no.
And he's like, where you going? Why you not fixing me my food, woman? Mm-hmm. And she's like, I have a class to go through. I have a shoot. See you later.
Okay, I'm famous, babe.
And he was like, I don't like this. So eventually they divorced
because
he married a 16-year-old, new 16-year-old. He came back to an 18-year-old, 19-year-old woman.
Why'd you marry a child? Working. This was your fault. Okay.
Yeah. So they divorced, of course. Yeah. So she dug into her career and she really wanted to focus on being a better actor. So like a real actor. So she spent the first 6 months at Fox learning that, singing, dancing, like I said, observing movie processes. Her contract was renewed.
Okay.
For another 6 months. And she was given her first film roles, just small parts in a couple films, Dangerous Years, Scooter Hooter, Scooter Hay, you know, that kind of stuff.
No, I believe it.
She also enrolled at the Actors Laboratory Theater and focused on the techniques of the group theater.
Yeah.
And again, she was enthusiastic and even her old shyness was still kind of there.
Yeah.
She basically was one of these women who she blossomed. She became a beauty and she knew she was beautiful, but she didn't have the confidence because of her early childhood stuff to really take advantage of that beauty. I think like you kind of know, like when you, because by all accounts, when she was like 15, 16, the guys were whistling, the thing, all of that stuff started happening. It was very obvious. But again, this is a girl for half of her life up to that point was shuttled back and forth.
Yeah.
Your mother's in the loony bin. And back then, now we would have compassion for people like that, but people would tease you and be like, well, there's something wrong with you. Your mother's in the crazy house.
Yeah.
So again, she's like, this is great. I can see maybe if I really get into this, this is a way that I can like have a career, do something that's satisfying, you know? Excuse me. Now, again, these contracts were not lucrative, especially unless you became a star right away. So she had to do other jobs. She took jobs at like janitorial jobs. She worked as a dancing pacer behind the scenes that basically kept lead actors on point on musical sets.
Oh, that sounds fun.
Yeah. All kinds of odd jobs. Again, she's young. She's like 19, 20 at this point. Right. So she continued to study and she started networking. So she also befriended. Yeah. Gossip columnist Sydney Skolsky.
Sounds good.
And she also started attending the studio functions and this is where she started to get the reputation of getting around, I think.
Okay.
Listen, girls got to do what a girl's got to do. One thing I admire about her that she has in common with Meg Thee Stallion, I don't think that Marilyn was above having sex for getting, doing sexual favors for getting something. Listen. I don't think she was above that. But if you're going to do that, you need to get something out of it. Okay. Like, just don't be doing it for free.
Exactly. Like, listen, you're going to take advantage of a vulnerable need. Then you better give. Okay. Right. She's going to be the lead. Like the whole system of that is terrible. I get it. It is. And it's terrible, but you know, who like started it is what I want to say first. But second of all,
it's set up that way. And honestly, it could have just been a matter of like, well, this is how things are. I don't just want to sleep with this guy and get nothing out of it. But this is, I think, where that reputation comes around. But I love it how the men always frame it like she got around. It's like, well, no, you guys were demanding sex for favors. Like, what are you talking about?
But like, also because she was abused like that.
Exactly.
She was abused without any grown up being like, that was wrong. I love you.
Right.
That, you know, like with no support. So her view of the world and how you function in it is inherently screwed.
Yeah.
You know,
it's like, well, boys will be boys. This is how men are. Right. So at least get something out of it. And I wouldn't be surprised if some older woman gave her that exact advice. Yeah. So,
and this way, in this way, she gets something out of it when she was a kid and couldn't control it. So I can see where she went. Well, now you know, it all sucks. Yep.
Yeah.
Obviously.
And no one ever, men do this all the time too. And no one ever talks about them. But anyway, so she eventually got into a friends with benefits relationship with a Fox executive by the name of Joseph Sneck Schneck, who persuaded his friend Harry Cohn, who is the head of Columbia Pictures, to sign Marilyn to a contract with them.
Okay.
So she, now she's over at Columbia Pictures in 1948. Okay. Now at Columbia, so she came in with this name, and again, she's still sort of like light brown, reddish kind of hair. So they're like, oh, we're going to model her after Rita Hayworth. Right. But Rita, they already had a redhead. Rita was a redhead. So they actually bleached her hair blonde, which is so ironic because she grew up loving Jean Harlow. You think that she would have come to that, but no, they're like, oh, because that's how they work. They're like, we already got a redhead, so let's get some more blondes. Or if she's a blonde, what kind of blonde she is. So this is where they first bleached her her hair platinum blonde.
Interesting. You know? Okay.
So unfortunately, she didn't have a lot of luck at Columbia. Her only film there was a low budget film, But because she was really ambitious, it didn't really. They didn't renew her contract after 6 months. So she was kind of heartbroken. But she didn't let that, because again, she's ambitious. So she's what, 20 at this point, around 20 years old. So she returned to modeling, to pay the bills. But you know, that kind of, because now she has a different look too than what she had before.
Yeah.
So she had some modeling jobs, but it wasn't enough to cover the bills all the time. So in fact, she was kind of desperate financially. So much so that when she was asked to pose for artistic nudes by photographer Tom Kelly for his special calendars, she only agreed because reportedly around the time he was offering $50 and she needed just that amount to make a payment on her car.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Well, you know. It's art.
Yeah.
Get it.
Yeah. And she wasn't opposed to nudity. Like, she's just, yeah. So during the shoot, it was all above board. His wife was there. It was all very professional. And when she went to sign the paperwork, she actually signed it Mona Monroe, thinking, I guess, because, you know, she's like, I'm an actress now. Like,
right.
I just did this. Yeah. So, again, she was comfortable with the nudity. It wasn't anything like, and when you see the pictures, you're like, oh, these are actually very artistic. So again, she was just sort of struggling. So she's come off like these contracts that haven't really hit. So she's had these contracts, but she hasn't really broken through really.
Okay.
So she's at a crossroads. It's like, do I give this up and just look for a rich husband? Do I call it quits? What's going on? She really wanted to be a serious actor.
Right.
And around this time is when she met and became the protege and mistress of the vice president of the William Morris Agency, a man by the name of Johnny Hyde.
Okay.
Now, he was a lot older than her. And again, you know, she probably has some daddy issues like so many people.
Oh, yeah.
But he was, by all accounts, also, he was kind to her.
Okay, good.
You know, so he actually fell in love with her and he was getting older. So he actually offered to marry her, to leave his wife and marry her and put, you know, set her up. And he's like, you know, you will inherit. Obviously, I'm going to leave some to some people, but you'll inherit all my stuff. And she said no. She turned him down.
Really?
So she's not a gold digger.
No. No, I think she, I mean, it sounds to me like from the beginning, she didn't want to be desperate. So she wanted to get what she wanted to be able to be financially secure so she could create that stability that she did not have. And that her mother... Yeah. Never had, right? Yeah. Like that. Okay, that's my armchair therapy session for Marilyn Monroe. Okay, you're welcome.
I just think that's an interesting thing that she basically had the opportunity to become a trophy wife. And he was a lot older than her, so he was, by all accounts, he's probably gonna die soon.
Yeah,
And I think he even said that to her, like, "Listen, I ain't got long on this earth, girl, but you make me happy, and I want to, you know, make sure that you're taken care of."
Yeah.
So she turned down his marriage proposal, but she did accept his offer for plastic surgery. Reportedly, like a nose job, and then like she had like a lip thing and then a chin. So something to do with her chin. So to just, you know, because if you're on the screen, you also get, you look at your face more. I mean, you know this too, as an actor, you can see like, oh, so she did accept that. So he paid for that. And but again, he seems like a pretty, you know, I mean, his wife probably doesn't think so, a pretty decent guy, especially compared to that day. So he continued to help her. So through his connections, she was actually able to land two small roles in two really big, important movies.
Okay. Which what?
One called The All About Eve.
Oh, yes.
And if you see her in that, you're like, oh, my God, this is Marilyn Monroe. That came out in 1950, and John Huston's The Asphalt Jungle.
Oh.
So these are two critically acclaimed movies during that year, and she has a small part in them. So that's not bad. Like he, you know, she, so much so that Photoplay magazine, which was the magazine to be mentioned in. Actually praised her performance because they're like, she's only on screen for a few minutes, but you're like, who's that girl?
Okay.
And this is where, like, being the bombshell, this is where, you know, she's popping on screen, right?
Yes.
They're like, who's that girl? Like, we want more of her. And because of that, that, you know, that buzz she got from Photoplay, and with Hyde's help, she actually negotiated a 7-year contract with 20th Century Fox.
Yes.
With one caveat, that what? Fox could opt out and not renew after each year.
So that's not a 7-year contract. That's a 1-year contract.
But, you know, again, things are starting to look up. She's still a young woman. Well, this is 1950. So what is she? 20?
20, like four.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So she's like still a young woman. So things are starting to look up, except only a few days after signing the contract, Hyde died of a heart attack.
Oh,
well, so her mentor and the person who was like looking after her, actually, he died suddenly. And she was obviously very devastated, but she carried on. Because she had that little foot in the door, she was able to just sort of carry on. But again, I would imagine emotionally, she's like, everyone I love keeps leaving me.
I feel like he was probably more of a father figure to her as far as how she felt towards him.
And he looked after her.
Yeah.
Something that she didn't have a lot of when she was a kid.
She didn't.
So she carried on, and this with this new, like, so this sex kitten persona is really starting to, you know, be codified around her, right? So, and it helped her get more notice, and also helped her get more popularity with audiences, which, by the way, back then they used to, the studios used to rate how popular you were by how much fan mail you got.
Oh, yes. I've heard that.
And she started to receive several thousand a week.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So she's, you know, she's actually starting to get, you know, more buzz. She's actually starting to break out around between 1950 and 1952.
Okay.
And then in 1952, the Hollywood Foreign Press named her, quote, the best young box office personality, end quote.
Oh, yeah. I like how they didn't go so far as to say actress.
Yeah.
You know, I would be pissed.
So she's starting to, like I said, get some buzz. You're like, oh, I know who that is. She's actually famous, right? She's actually famous and about to become even more famous, right? She's like on the cusp. And then in 1952, former New York Yankee baseball star Joe DiMaggio sees her, a picture of her in one of those, like a baseball jersey, but it's like very, like, dressed up very sexy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I want to meet her.
Yeah.
So he gets to meet her. So she has the buzz from like the industry a little bit. And then she starts dating a wildly popular American figure.
Know this because of Smash.
Right.
I don't want to admit that, but that those were the images. Do you know they did a thing on Broadway recently? They did. And I know because I follow Yvette Nicole Brown. I love her.
Uh-huh.
And she was in it. Okay, that
you
was
mean
very
of Smash much- or of Marilyn?
Smash.
Oh,
but it's
okay,
about
Smash.
Marilyn. I know. I just made a hard left turn right now. But that's, you know, so, my brain does that sometimes.
No, anyway. I understand. Our listeners are probably going to make the same connection. But just imagine, so she has this buzz and then she starts dating like this really popular, like an American hero, right? He's yes. retired. Joe DiMaggio was huge.
Totally.
Huge, as they would say in Queens. So things are looking up. Like, she's actually where she's always kind of wanted to be, you know, like yeah. it's happening. And then those old nudes resurface. Because what happens basically,
America, calm down.
She becomes she's getting more buzz. People are starting to see her more places. And then obviously when she starts dating DiMaggio, and then those two become like a power couple, right? The end couple. Then men who've been looking at her nudes forever and ever and ever are starting to be like, huh, that now she looks kind of familiar. Is that? So then those rumors get back to the studio and they're furious, of course.
Yeah.
Because nowadays this wouldn't be a big deal. But back then this could be like the death of your career, like overnight. Like, yeah. Yeah. This is basically the equivalent of being accused of rape, sexual assault. Like, this is like, even though it's her body. Like,
it does. Yeah. It does make me think that maybe society is slightly better. Because now if you're accused of rape, you could be canceled, which is a good reason to be canceled, right? Like, let's cancel the shit out of anyone who has done horrible things. But, like, you know, nude pictures, that's just anti-woman. Being pissed about that is anti-woman.
Yeah.
You know?
So the executives at the studio were furious. And so they called her in and demanded, you know, she tell them what happened. And at first she denied it, but then she was like, yeah, I did it. And so they were like, oh, we got to do damage control. So they set up an interview with a friendly female reporter.
Okay.
But they weren't sure the reporter's going to get in there and switch up on them. So they were all very nervous and they coached her and all this other stuff. But when she got in there and sat with the reporter, she actually threw that out and she just was honest. Now, some people think that this is probably either one of her most brilliant performances or this is a true insight into who she was as a person.
Okay.
And this is where her persona, and this is why I have a complicated relationship to her persona, because it's like she is an over-sexualized character, which I applaud. But then it's like, then there's that persona of her being like this broken, innocent child. Which one is true? We know nowadays that both can be true.
Yes.
But was she aware of when to turn it on or turn it off? Or was she just being herself? Right?
Yeah.
But in all, it doesn't matter, because when she actually talked with the woman, and it must have come off as genuine, because she just broke down in tears and she was like, I was just desperate. I needed money. Yeah. And, you know, I'm just alone in the world. I have nobody to help me. I have no parents. And the woman actually took pity on her. And she's like, in the report, in the article afterwards, she was like, actually, Marilyn represents so many young women.
Oh, yes.
Who have been left on their own, especially after the war, whether they were, and she's a widow. She was married to someone in the war. They came back, the men, all the women. So think about all the women readers reading this who can relate to this story.
Totally.
Right? So it actually, the way the spin was, it actually gained her even more popularity and sympathy, which is shocking for 1950s.
Like, yeah, it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So people loved her even more. They started rooting for her, basically. Oh. After this, she started to receive top billing, and she was actually featured on the cover of Life magazine.
Okay.
As, quote, the talk of Hollywood, and gossip columnist Hedda Hopper. Remember Hedda Hopper?
Yeah, I remember her.
Declared Marilyn Monroe the cheesecake queen turned box office smash.
Okay.
Hedda always got to be fucking shady. This bitch.
Listen, she just talks. I can't with her. Okay. Yeah.
So now, again, Marilyn is now she's basically a household name at this point.
Yes.
Basically. Right. She had a few films, but she hasn't really had her vehicle, star vehicle. But she's like a Hollywood, like a household name. So, but again, she knew the power of the sex symbol persona. But she really in all the research I did, she really wanted to be considered a real actor. So she actually began studying taking acting classes with Michael Chekhov.
Yes. I did know that.
So they decided that they're going to give her a chance to do more serious things, right?
Okay.
So they say to her, they're like, okay, well, here's a role. And these are two roles that I think had they actually really worked, they could have changed the trajectory of her career and her legacy. So she was cast in a film called Don't Bother to Knock, where she plays a mentally ill babysitter.
Oh, wow.
And I actually watched this film. She's actually quite good in this film. She's, I would say her performance is probably a B. Like,
okay.
Yeah, there's moments where she's like really has depth, and then she kind of, and I can see her switching back into like the persona that she probably learned, like with the breath and it's actually, I saw the potential, and I really wish that she had been able to do more of those roles and really just,
because
got,
in those
sunk her
days,
teeth into it.
Yeah, in those days, like for her, where she was at, she needed more opportunity to go there. She needed a great acting coach, and she, you know, so that she, as a human, could trust the work that she could do. I am analyzing her as an actor. Yes, I know what I'm doing, but I did it anyways. There we go.
But back then they're like, they needed a sure hit, especially on like somebody that they're trying to put money around. So it got mixed reviews from critics.
Okay.
So they kind of freaked out. So they were like, well, let's go back to the sex kitten kind of thing. Right.
Right.
So she's smart. She's like, I just got here, so let me just figure this out.
Yeah.
So but also off screen, she went along with a lot of these like stunts, these sex symbol publicity stunts by dressing very sexy and putting on that. Oh, you know, and this is where, honestly, where I think because she didn't have proper like therapy.
Yes.
You know, time to really think about like, do you really want to do these things, or are you doing these things because you think that's what's expected of you? You know, she was the grand marshal at the Miss America pageant parade. And she even reportedly told columnist Earl Wilson that she usually wore no underwear.
Okay.
So you see that like playing into like,
yes.
And she's thinking, oh, and this is, and she's probably being coached by the people at the studio too.
I was going
to
say,
really play.
Like, she probably has a very solid PR coach that is telling her what to do and how to do it. And she's listening.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, for all intents and purposes, it worked.
It worked.
They were right. You know?
It totally worked. And I feel like she also, you know, someone like Goldie Hawn, who came out as had one sort of persona. And then when she got a little bit older, more power, she actually consciously changed this. I think of like other famous blondes like Reese Witherspoon and and like, but they also probably had more, I hate to say it, maybe talent or more experience but also this is a very traumatized woman who's not really in touch with her feelings. Cause if she were in touch with her feelings, she would be a mess. Like she wouldn't be able to get out of bed, you know? So this is where my like issue with this kind of thing, because it's like if you're going to play that part, like Madonna, right? So Madonna is basically, and one thing I always liked about Madonna is that Madonna always seemed to be in control of her own image and playing into the sex because she wanted to do it.
It was for Madonna, it felt like it was always a choice. There was nothing about her. It was her. She made these decisions and it was her body, like her body, her choice, you know, like, whereas Marilyn Monroe, got a ticket on the train she thought she wanted, and then the train just went wherever and she was already there. So what is she going to do?
And it feels like an act that she was okay with putting on, but maybe perhaps even in her own mind, she didn't know when to turn it off. And that could contribute to why people many different people have many different opinions of her. And these are people who actually knew her.
Oh,
some said it was all an act. Some said it was not an act. You remember when Paris Hilton was like, came out and we're like, oh, that whole thing was like, it's hot. Was a total act.
Yes.
Like, like with Marilyn, it's kind of hard to tell which was which. And it could be because she didn't know. Who knows? But yeah. So I'm just going to speed through towards the end because we, again, a lot of this you can find. There's so much information about Marilyn. But I just wanted to talk it about. I wanted to frame it from this point of view, like how this sort of sex pot and kitten legacy has affected women today, you know?
Yeah.
So in 1952, she was titled the It Girl of 1952, right. Basically. So she is fully like broken through. She's got this contract. During this period, she also started to gain a reputation for being difficult to work with. And I think this is where the sexism comes in. So you think if you put on this sexy persona, it insulates you from sexism, right?
Yeah, it does.
It does not.
Nothing.
It does not. Yeah. So some historians attributed this whole thing of being like, she's difficult to her combination of being she wanted to be a perfectionist. She had low self-esteem and she had stage fright often. Yes. Yeah. You know, she also disliked the fact that she didn't have more control, you know, on the sets. Because during photo shoots, she could like set the precedent to be like, I want this and I want that. But at the studio, she didn't have a lot of control still, right?
Right.
And then you can imagine the scrutiny with the high profile, her new high profile, the scrutiny, you know. She also apparently suffered from anxiety and chronic insomnia.
Oh, yes. I've heard that about her.
Yeah.
So, that's not a good combination.
No. So she started using barbiturates, amphetamines, and alcohol. And a side note, Marilyn Monroe actually was one of the first like Hollywood women who really emphasized actually weightlifting and physical activity. Like she was really big into that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So she did Pilates. You know, I love Pilates.
Oh,
and there
are
some very famous pictures of her like doing Pilates. And so I feel like I know her and we're the same person. Okay, that's all I have to say about that.
Yeah. So she, which was unusual at the time, it was just a lot of times they would just take weight loss pills, but she actually was into working out and things like that. So that's why the whole barbiturates, amphetamines is unusual and alcohol for her. Because by all accounts, previous to this, she actually was a bit of a health nut, actually.
Yes.
So she did not become severely, addicted at first. And a lot of people, the pills were just flowing at the studio. So,
it's
just a way to cope. Yeah.
It's a way it was a way to control their stars too. They'd be like, we need her to have a good night's sleep. Take this.
Yeah. You know, and a lot of and then the whole thing about her being difficult, you know, one of her biographers, Lois Banner, said that Marilyn was being bullied because also in these men's head, it's like you're just a piece of ass, like just say the lines and look pretty and don't say nothing. Right.
Yeah.
You know, just stand over there, sit and talk, like just stand and talk, get on your mark and talk. So and she thought it would change once she got more popular, but it didn't. And also, again, that whole sort of sex persona, you're thinking, oh, I'm getting this attention. It is powerful. It's power.
Right.
It's a form of power, but it's not powerful enough to overcome sexism. In 1953, she would emerge as a major sex symbol, especially after, and this is also around the time that she and her makeup artist, Alan Whitey Snyder, developed the trademark look.
Okay.
Dark arched eyebrows, pale skin, glistening, red lips, and a beauty mark.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
This is where the transformation is complete in 1953.
Okay.
And this year she appears in the movie Niagara. I watched this. This is really good. This is like a colored film noir. And she plays a femme fatale scheming to murder her husband, played by Joseph Cotten.
Okay.
And this film, when it was released, was protested as immoral by women's groups because of when she's about to be murdered, there's this long tracking shot of basically of her walking.
Okay.
And it was so like sexually evocative. But the New York Times wrote that, quote, "The Falls and Miss Monroe are something to see." And they go on to say that the perfect actress, she may not be the perfect actress at this point. She can be seductive even when she walks, end quote.
Nice.
So that was like her first sort of big breakout, like star vehicle. Then she goes on what would follow after that, Gentlemen Prefer Blondes,
yeah,
which cemented her on-screen persona as the dumb blonde.
Yep. Sure did.
And then she also would go on to star in another film with Jane Russell. Okay. Jane Russell and, oh God, who's the other, Lauren Bacall. And it's so funny because originally that role was, intended for Betty Grable.
Oh.
20th Century Fox's, most popular blonde bombshell, but, in the 1940s, but Marilyn came on the scene and she started eclipsing everybody.
Yep, she did.
And for publicity for the movie, they actually, it's the famous one where she and Jane Russell are actually putting their hands in the cement at Grauman's Chinese Theater.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It was released, huge box office success.
Yeah.
Especially the Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend.
Mm-hmm.
You know? She then actually went on to star in another sort of similar kind of role and kind of like kind of a movie with Betty Grable and Lauren Bacall, How to Marry a Millionaire.
Oh, yes. I've seen it. Yeah. It's fantastic. Yep. It's so fun. She's so funny.
She's so funny. And that's the thing that people don't realize. She was like she was so comedically gifted, actually.
She really was. Like, I was going to say that, like, I can't remember the name of the movie. The first movie I saw with her in it, I was like, she's very funny. She's like very good. She's not famous for that, but that's what she is, you know?
And honestly, I think if she had been able to use that to just do like become basically the Sandra Bullock of her day, play all of those like romantic comedies. But, you know, again, hindsight is 2020. So by 1953, she was making money. She was a star. She was actually listed in the annual top 10 money making stars poll in both 53 and 54.
Okay, get it. Yes.
So she basically became the studio's greatest asset, along with CinemaScope, one historian said, Aubrey Solomon. So basically, she is like huge megastar. Of course, Hugh Hefner takes this opportunity to buy the nudes, post them in Playboy magazine.
All right.
I mean, it's a great business move. Okay.
Yeah, sure is.
The cover, she didn't pose for it, of course. The cover of the magazine that year was a picture of her from the Miss America pageant parade in 1952. And then, of course, the nude photos inside. Now, again, she's a big, 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 big star. But then she started to have... clash with studio heads, including Zanuck, who he didn't really like her.
Oh, really?
He come in, he didn't like her power. I don't know. Maybe he couldn't get her to sleep with him. Who knows?
Mm-hmm,
who
knows? Probably the last thing you just said sounds right to me.
Who knows?
Yeah.
She really wanted to do more serious films, and so they were fighting. So in January of 1954, he actually suspended her because she refused to shoot another musical comedy called The Girl in Pink Tights.
Okay.
Basically repeating the role in How to Marry a Millionaire and Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. But again, she's savvy. So she turned the focus. So she went off and married Joe DiMaggio.
Yep.
And the two went on their honeymoon. They went to Japan, where he actually did a exhibition game. When they came back, she and Fox Studios settled. And they actually gave her a new contract and a bonus of $100,000, which is $1.2 million. And a starring role in the film adaptation of The 7-Year Itch.
Yes.
So, I'm just going to sort of speed through this a little bit, but she basically, from then on, it was a mixture of fighting the studios for better roles. And but then they put her in the roles she doesn't really want to do, and they actually do well. And that's the problem. Like, they want her to get in these roles, but she wants to break out because she really wants to be a serious actor.
Okay.
Right. In the meantime, she during the 7-Year Itch, that's the famous like over the grate where the shirt, the dress comes up.
Yes.
That's the famous shot.
Okay.
So it was a publicity stunt. It was also like the studios know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Joe was furious.
Yes.
And he reportedly allegedly physically abused her.
Ugh.
She showed up to work with bruises on her. So she has money. She don't need to take that shit.
No. Nope.
So they divorced.
Yep.
Okay. So she basically, after that, she actually left Hollywood because she needed a break, and she went and founded with photographer Milton Green, a production studio called Marilyn Monroe Productions, MMP.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Which a lot of people call instrumental in the collapse of the studio system. So I think other stars were like, oh, I can have my own production company.
Oh, yes.
Okay. So she started that, and then she started a year-long battle with Fox in January 55. Basically, they were just trying to, they basically were trying to get her to comply because she seems compliant in her persona, in her
right.
And again, that whole sexual thing implies that you're compliant sexually into whatever you want and whispering, but that's just a persona.
Yeah.
You know, so while in New York, she focused on more serious acting, and she started studying with Lee Strasberg at the Actors Studio. He and his wife became very close with Marilyn, and they actually became, some people say, kind of too close to her. And basically, she only sort of listened to them from then on. And they encouraged her to get psychoanalysis to become a better actor. And I think that is a fatal flaw. You get psychoanalysis to become a better human.
Yeah, not a better actor. I have issues with Lee Strasberg's theories. I remember reading them when I was a kid because I was that level nerd. And thinking that this doesn't work. You can't.
Yeah.
The acting is pretend. find ways in through life, but you got to pretend.
Yeah. And this, you know, this at this point, she really needed good counsel and not just be like, go here so you can do this. So she's just making bad mistakes. She was on and off again with Joe, even though they're going through a divorce. She started dating a whole bunch of people, including Marilyn Monroe and different people. Dating other people, including Marlon Brando, excuse me.
Yes.
I would date. I would be one of his on his list.
Listen, Marlon Brando, back in the day, it would be the wrong choice, but I would make it.
Not to date Marlon Brando.
I would because,
So, and then around this time, she met Arthur Miller,
famed
playwright, which... Of all the men she was dating, she liked him the most. He was a lot older than her. And she probably thought of him because he's a serious intellectual, right?
Yeah.
The studio and her handlers did not like this because he was being investigated by the House of Un-American Activities. Again, this is around the blacklist. So the FBI actually opened up a file on her as well. Now, by the end of the year, she re-signed with Fox for another 7-year contract, and where in which MMP would get financing.
Okay.
And she would be paid $400,000 to make 4 films, which is about close to $5 million.
That's great.
And it granted her the right to choose her own projects, directors, and cinematographers.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's going pretty good. And then again, she goes on to start making more movies. Her and Arthur Miller marry.
Yes.
And I think she thought, well, I've tried the bad boys. Let me try the intellectual boys.
Right.
And then she dug into, starring in roles that she wanted to play in, including Bus Stop, in which she plays a saloon singer whose dreams of stardom are complicated by a naive cowboy who falls in love with her.
Yeah.
So for this role, she learned the Ozark accent.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now I want to see this movie.
Yeah. The film now, originally the director was like, I don't know about this. He had heard that she was difficult and her perfectionism made everything difficult. But in the end, it changed his opinion of her. And he later compared her to Charlie Chaplin in her ability to blend comedy and tragedy.
Yes.
Yeah.
She's really good. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is mid-1950. So she goes on to do this. And then some of the stuff, again, people are getting her. They want her to do the old shtick that happens.
Yeah.
And then people just disrespecting her. Again, I think that she's a prisoner of that old persona. And then just women asserting themselves is considered threatening, you know?
Mm-hmm.
In 1956, she starred in The Prince and the Showgirl with Laurence Olivier that was being produced by her company. They did not get along. Okay. He basically wanted her to play it like Vivian Leigh, his wife. I don't know if she was still his wife at the time, had done it in the stage play. And then the Strasbourgs are there, you know, whispering in her ear. It's just a mess. And then when the film came out, it got mixed reviews in America. The Americans did not like it at all. It was a better, more successful in actually Europe. And it actually garnered her a nomination for a BAFTA. So,
oh, really? Okay. Yeah.
So after returning from England, she was exhausted. Again, she's going through a lot of stuff. And so she's like, let me focus on having a family with this smart man. Right.
Right.
It didn't work.
No.
She had ectopic pregnancy. She had miscarriages. She was diagnosed with endometriosis. Yeah. She had been briefly hospitalized for a barbiturate overdose.
Oof.
And then she was fighting with her producing partner in the production company.
Okay. That's tough.
So all of this was just going on. So when she was getting ready to shoot Some Like It Hot in 1958, she was not in a good place.
Yeah.
And again, the men are coming here. She's a dumb blonde, just, you know, basically get in line, get on your mark and just do it. And then, you know, by all accounts, Jack Lemmon and Tony Curtis were also very sexist. So the production had a lot of issues. But in the end, Billy Wilder, the director, loved her performance.
She was amazing in it.
Yeah. And he says, quote, anyone can remember lines, but it takes a real artist to come on the set and know not her lines and know her lines and yet give the performance that she did.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. She was great in that. It's one of my favorite movies.
Yeah. For that, she received a Golden Globe, earned a Golden Globe for Best Actress.
Mm-hmm.
And it prompted Variety to call her a comedian with that combination of sex appeal and timing that just can't be beat. End quote.
Yes.
So
Jack Lemmon and Tony Curtis could suck it. I said it.
But see, this is where you have to believe in yourself.
Yes.
You can't look for outside validation. So around this time, she actually lost out on Breakfast at Tiffany's to Audrey Hepburn.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Now, her last film that she appeared in was in John Huston's The Misfits.
Oh, yeah.
Filming began in November of 1960. But again, she was having a lot of physical pain also.
Okay.
So she's taking the pill. She's had these miscarriages. She's endometriosis. Like, depending on how bad that is. She
that
also was diagnosed with gallstones.
Oof. That hurts.
Yeah. So it was really starting to show on her face also, like on her body. And she's only in her early 30s. She's just, only in her early 30s. So during the filming of that, they actually had to halt production to give her a week to detox.
You know, there is a Quantum Leap episode about that.
Well, she, you know, it's so interesting because John Huston, he even noted that when they were filming, he said, quote, she was not pretending an emotion. It was the real thing.
Yeah.
She would go deep down within herself and find it and bring it up into the consciousness, end quote. And this is why you need therapy for you and not to act.
Yes.
Okay.
Say it again for the people in the back. Yes.
Now, Miller, the thing didn't work out. Some people thought that he, after a while, he kind of looked down on her intellectually.
He wrote a whole ass play about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And then a part of her, I think she, again, if you don't know who you are, you can't really tell people who you are. So they're going to make,
because
even when you tell people who you are, they still make their own opinions
that's a fact.
About who you are.
Absolutely.
So they file for divorce. And so for the first 6 months of 1961, she had a lot of health issues. She underwent, I don't even know how to say this. It's basically a procedure to help with the gallstones.
Okay.
She had surgery for endometriosis and she spent 4 weeks in the hospital for depression. This is where I'm thinking, she's thinking back to her mother being in a mental institution.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, is it hereditary? Did I get what my mother had?
Right. Yeah.
What is going on?
Yeah.
You know, she eventually moved back from New York to California in 61 and she purchased a home in Brentwood.
Okay.
And she returned to the public eye in the spring of 62, where she appeared. She received the World Film Favorite from the Golden Globe Awards Committee.
Okay.
And she began shooting short film. So she was just trying to get back to work. But again, she started shooting Fox's Something's Gotta Give, a remake of My Favorite Wife from 1940. But her health problems started to come in again. And even though multiple doctors said that she indeed was sick, the studio pressured her. We're trying to pressure her and actually kind of publicly bully her into coming back to work, because they said that they said publicly that they thought she was faking it.
Okay, that's fucking bullshit. This is the whole, like, the medical community doesn't believe women, and even the medical community, when they did believe her, it was so believable when these not doctors decided to tell the world that she was faking it, that people were like, she's faking it.
Yeah.
Y'all believe women. Come on. Stop it.
She's going through her second divorce. She's having all of these issues with her body. She wanted to have a baby. She can't have a baby. She's in pain. She's probably taking pills. She's depressed. And this is when, on May 19th, 1962, she goes to Madison Square Garden and sings "Happy Birthday, Mr. President. Happy birthday to you." Because I always wondered, where in her career did this come from? And it was at this time. If she had people around her who loved her, they'd be like, "What are you doing? Where are you going? Why are you?" Because in that, she seems kind of out of it.
Yeah.
But she goes back to the default of like, because that's what people expect. But it seemed kind of off, and it's very uncomfortable when you watch it.
It is uncomfortable.
And she also left set to do this. So because she left set, the studio was furious. So they replaced her actually with another actress.
Oh, really?
Eventually, they brought her back. They apologized. And she was... she tried to detox again and just get back into to work, right? Because at least that's something that was kind of going good in her life.
Right.
So around this time, she was doing interviews. She did one for Life and Cosmopolitan. And she also did her first photo shoot for Vogue, where she shot with photographer Bert Stern. And he collected for two series of photographs over 3 days.
Oh, wow.
And after her death, it was titled The Last Sitting. Okay, so all of this is going on. All of this is going on. And less than 3 months later, on August 4th, 1962, her housekeeper, Eunice Murray, was staying overnight at the Brentwood home. She woke up around 3 a.m. August 5th and thought that something was kind of off. So she saw the light on in Marilyn's room. So she knocked, but wasn't able to get through. She called Marilyn's psychiatrist, Ralph Greenson, who came to the house, and they broke in through the bedroom window. Okay. They found Marilyn dead.
Ugh.
Physician Hyman Eagleburg arrived around 3:50 on August 5th, and he pronounced her dead at 4:25. And so they notified the cops. Then later on in an autopsy report, they say that she died between 8:30 and 10:30 the previous night.
Oh, wow.
Toxicology report that her cause of death was acute barbiturate poisoning.
Ugh.
Now, I'm almost finished. Many think that there was a conspiracy with JFK, the FBI, all this stuff. But her doctors say that that's poppycock, because they say that she was prone to severe fears and frequent depressions with abrupt and unpredictable mood changes. And that she had overdosed several times in the past, possibly intentionally or unintentionally.
Right.
So due to these facts and the lack of indication of foul play, Deputy Coroner Thomas Noguchi classified her death as a probable suicide.
Oh, wow.
Now, her sudden death, because again, she's a beloved icon, was front page news in United States and Europe. Her funeral was held at Westwood Village Memorial Park Cemetery on August 8th. And was private and attended by only her closest friends and associates.
Okay.
The service was arranged by Joe DiMaggio.
Oh, wow.
Her half-sister, Bernice.
Yeah.
and her business manager, Inez Melson. Hundreds of spectators crowded the streets around the cemetery. She was later entombed at crypt number 24 at the Corridor of Memories.
Wow.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the story of Marilyn Monroe.
Wow.
That I'm sorry, that was very long.
It was very long, but...
And... But,
she, I mean, it's an amazing story. It's an amazing listening to the journey that she truly went on, as opposed to how we picture her, is a really interesting sort of dichotomy.
That's, and the part of me that's conflicted by it is that, oh, like, I'm just compliant and sexual. And, and it's like what the more modern version of, like, I'm a cool girl, I'm a cool chick, whatever you want, do whatever you want. It's like, no, because that can work to get you in the door, but that also will then come back to bite you in the ass.
I worked for this random theater company in New York 100 years ago, where it was a murder mystery group, right? And they would go to different, like, they traveled. So anytime you get a theater that travels, they pay you. So fine, let's go. And my character, you got to show up. And they're like, this is, you get the specs of your character, right? And you're improvising the whole night, right? And my, what I don't remember any other ones, but I remember this one. And she was an actress who was fabulous. And they gave me, you know, they give you costume pieces. They say, basically get rid of this kind of dress and we're going to give you the rest. And so I had this feather boa that I had all night, and I was supposed to be a flirty, like, Marilyn Monroe type. Mm-hmm. I was pretend. And these guys would hit on me. I was married. I was clearly like an actor in the thing. Like, and yet, like, one guy grabbed my phone and put his phone number in my phone, mm-hmm. which freaked me out. I was playing pretend, but it is so, I was like, how did you not see it? And that moment in my life, listening to Marilyn Monroe's story, I'm like, how did the world not see it? They don't want to.
Well, yeah, because they don't want to understand women.
Right, exactly. Like, I remember towards the end of the night, a guy, like, wouldn't let it go. And I was like, my name is Miriam. I am not interested in you. Like, I'm talking like my normal voice. And he was like, oh, cute. Like, okay, I'm bye.
Yeah. Even when you change back, and I would imagine that's difficult when you're trying to have an intimate relationship.
And right. And you have to keep it up for life. For going to the store, for going to the thing, so that anyone who ever sees you, it goes like, oh, okay, that is her, right?
And yeah, and honestly, I think she just didn't know how to turn it off. And part of me just wants to give her a hug. Like, she just needed someone around her that she would listen to, that was giving her good advice. Be like, baby girl, you need to, like, take 2 years off, work on your health. Let's figure out what's going on with your health. Do you want to have a baby, or are you just doing it to please your husband?
Right.
Like, also, well, let's, like, do this.
She might have been in a fair amount of pain. And if you're in pain a lot, you're going to do what it takes to get out of pain.
Yeah. So I'm so sorry that was so long and we kept getting interrupted. But who is your notorious woman this week?
My notorious woman, total side, total, like, totally other part of the world. Okay. My notorious woman today, her name is Jaya Sayalua. Okay. Who?
Okay. Yeah.
I'll get there. She was born on July 19th, 1988 in Leone, American Samoa. Now, I used to say it was Samoa, but it's Samoa. I was wrong. Samoa.
Okay.
Okay. So she took up football, soccer. Come on. Okay. If you're in Europe, it is football. If you're in America, it's soccer, but that's because America doesn't like to change. Okay. At 11 years old, her first coach was a man named Nikki Salapu, who was, American Samoa was sort of famous for being a terrible team. And Nikki, who was actually a great goalkeeper and one really talented, was famous for... being in the game wherein they lost 31-0 in 2001. which I know Lavetta's eyes just went, whoa, because if you know anything about football, I do because of Ted Lasso. Thank you, Ted Lasso. The games are usually like 2-0, like these intense, powerful games that end in stress, like maybe 3, but 31, that's a lot. So she studied performing at the University of Hawaii. She loved football. I just call it football because I'm European. she is a I'm going to say this wrong, but I'm going to try not to. Fa'afafine, which is considered, which is a third gender present in Polynesian society. I thought this was really fascinating. And truth be told, there is a really great movie where her character is very present, and I watched it, and the movie is great, and I was like, I gotta talk about her, and here we are.
Yes.
So fa'afafine, so fa'a means in manner of, and the word fafine means woman, so in manner of woman. And it is a recognized gender identity slash like gender role in traditional Samoan society, and it's an integral part of Samoan culture. So basically they are, they're AMAB, assigned male at birth. That's what that means. But they, explicitly embody like feminine traits. And it's, so we would connect it right to like transgender.
Yeah. A trans woman. Yeah.
And that is fair. But what I read was that while gay and transgender overlap, although gay, this is what I read, but I don't think gay has anything to do with this. So I'll just repeat that and say as transgender overlaps, they don't align exactly with Samoan gender terms found in traditional culture. So I think this is really interesting because I've been looking into this a lot because I feel like, I mean, I do feel like it is... This is Miriam, so you can yell at me later. It is all connected in terms of our humanity. But it is about how different cultures respond to the truth of our humanity, wherein transgender, in our Western brains, transgender is something we comprehend. So I'll use that word. As transgender is norm, right? Gay is this, we've always been gay and transgender, but we called it different things. And what I love is that now, today, currently, there are societies that is just absolutely part of the fabric of the world and it's embraced. And they kind of separate themselves a little from terms like transgender because in the West, we're still fighting about it. Where there...
Are you trying to say that... We dumb in the West? Is that what you're trying to say? In simple,
what is dumb?
No, I know what you're saying.
No, theirs is a more nuanced. We're dumb.
Yeah, well, theirs is a more nuanced, language, nuanced conversations around that idea.
Exactly. And I totally respect that. So I'm not saying it. I'm not trying to argue that. No, you're transgender. I'm not. What I am saying is that we can learn from them and how they accept, you know, what it is. Cause it's beautiful.
Mm. Yeah.
Let's talk about her. What did she do? Okay. So she made her debut for the American Samoa national team as a 15-year-old.
Oh, okay.
During qualifying for the 2006 World Cup, they lost to Fiji 11-0.
Oh, they're not very good, are they?
That's okay because they have heart.
Yep.
Listen, she was a first half substitute in that game, and then made further three substitute appearances. In qualifying for the 2010 World Cup, and then 4 substitute appearances at the 2011 Pacific Games. So, Okay, so in the movie Next Goal Wins, this is the story of the movie. I might give things away, but I think what I'm going to talk about kind of just goes with the movie because I get her perspective on it too. So Coach Thomas Rongen in 2011 shows up, was hired to maybe make them a little bit better because they were not doing so well. And the movie talks about how they do win against Tonga. She was given extended game time, and she made her first start for the team and achieved her first ever international win against Tonga during qualifying for the 2014 World Cup. So at this point, American Samoa had been outscored 229-12 in all international matches it had played. And were joint last in FIFA world rankings.
Oh.
But she provided an assist and made a last-minute goal line clearance to help her team to the narrow 2-1 win, and she was declared woman of the match by her coach. She was later sent a letter by FIFA president. I don't know if it's FIFA or FIFA.
I think it's FIFA.
I was right the first time. Sepp Blatter is the president. And they recognized her achievements as the first openly transgender footballer to appear in a World Cup qualifying match. So they followed that win against Tonga with a 1-1 draw. You can do that in football, aka soccer. Did you know that? I know that because I'm smart, but also Ted Lasso.
Okay.
Actually, I only know that because Ted Lasso. I just want to pretend I'm smart. So they needed a win in the team's last game against the bitter rivals of Samoa. So American Samoa and Samoa, they hate each other. And they just needed to beat them. The point is they didn't, but that's okay because we got to have heart. Miles and miles and miles of heart. She didn't do as well, and she was in the process of her medical transition, and she points to that as a dip in her performance, and was ultimately cut from the team in 2015. Aww. So then she decided to pause her transition to attempt a comeback, and she succeeded.
Yes.
So this is a quote from her. She says, quote, "At the time, I was really focused on my transition and on a heavy hormone replacement treatment. I still wanted to play football, but I couldn't perform as well because of the treatment. After being cut, I had to make a choice about whether I wanted to continue on HRT or choose football. And she chose football. So, quote, it's my first love. It's my passion. Transition came second." I'm going to continue with her quote, which I think is amazing. "For Fafa..." I keep saying this wrong. For fa'afafin. I did practice, but that didn't work.
No, I believe you.
For fa'afafine, I think. "There is no pressure to look a certain way or act a certain way. Transitioning only came when I was pressured into the idea that I have to look as passable as possible to live a comfortable life in America." Okay. So she continues. "So I chose not to take hormones anymore after 2015. And by 2019, I made my comeback. I was stronger than I ever was as an athlete and one of the most senior players. I was named captain of the national team that year." She was recalled. Okay, that was end quote. Okay. "She was recalled to the men's national squad for the 2019 Pacific Games, joining Nikki Salapu. I'm saying it wrong. Salapu. I think I said it right. Her old coach. Know. Cute, right?
Okay, yeah.
"And in 2019, she was captain at their World Cup campaign." Okay, I just want to talk about the fact that nobody gives a shit that she's on this team.
Good.
Nobody gives a fuck. They just think she's a good player. Nobody's wondering if she's a boy or a girl. Nope. She's a good player. She was born AMAP so she could start playing. It's fine. No one gives a shit.
Yep.
Okay. How do I feel? I don't know. I'm so shy. Okay.
Well, you know, it's really about like how, and actually, as you were saying this, like she took time off to heal and take care of her health. And I'm like, that's what Marilyn should have done.
Yes.
Just take time off and look after yourself. Yeah.
Right.
Take care of yourself. Because if you're not healthy, you can't show up anywhere. So.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And she did it. So, and also, okay. So she also became a coach for the American Samoan boys football team, 2018-2019. And she led the team to that year to for the boys JV title. And she received Coach of the Year award from the Football Federation American Samoa. In her style of play, she's full makeup. So this girl wears makeup. I don't like to wear makeup now, although I do
I can't, especially not working out where I'm sweating. No, I can't do
But I don't, if I have to do Pilates, which is not the most sweaty thing, I can't wear makeup.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of reminds me also of Jackie Joyner Kersee and, oh God, who was the one that was really, why is her name escaping me? She had the long nails. I think from the 80s and 90s. And even the ones now, like the, I'm thinking of the track stars. They have on this makeup and these nails. I'm like, I wouldn't be dying. I don't know how they do it. Yeah.
Some women sweating just thinking about like it. But she loves it. Makes her happy. Yeah.
She's like, I want to look cute.
Right?
Okay.
And she became a FIFA ambassador for equality and LGBTQ plus athletes. She was also appointed to the jury of the FIFA Diversity Award. PS also has trained as a referee and has helped referee matches in her American Samoan homeland.
Oh.
So there are two films about her. The first is 2014 British documentary called Next Goal Wins, which documented that year of them, their attempt to qualify for the World Cup in 2014. And then Taika Waititi. Have you heard of him?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. What We Do in the Shadows. Yeah. I love that show. Directed an amazing movie. It's so good. It's now you can watch it. I forget. Hulu? I don't know. Amazon? I don't.
Google it, right?
Look, it's like so easy to find you guys. It's so good. It's out now. It just came out like the end of 2023. He considered casting her to play herself, but ultimately chose a fellow Samoan Fa'afafine, Kaimana, for the role.
Oh.
So that happened.
What's the name of the film?
It's called Next Goal Wins.
Oh, okay. That's the feature. That's not the documentary?
That's not the documentary.
Okay.
There's a documentary, and that is called Next Goal Wins.
Okay.
Very confusing.
Okay.
I want to give another quote that she says about being Fa'afafine. I think I said that right. I'm sorry, but when you're public school educated in the
USA.
That's all they teach us. That's all they teach. Three letters. It's not enough. I almost said numbers because I'm dumb.
Oh my God. So true.
She says, quote, growing up Fa'afafine often doesn't include a coming out experience that a lot of LGBTQ plus people have. It's more of a coming of age experience. At a certain point, your family starts to realize you being in touch with mannerisms that are more commonly associated with the female gender. Your family doesn't force it on you to live that way, but they make sure that you're nurtured in a way where you're comfortable and safe. That stems from a culture and traditions that predate colonization.
Mm.
What? I love her so much.
And I love that they were create an environment where you are nurtured and safe.
Yes.
Yeah. That's what we all need and deserve.
Yeah. And she talks about, too, seeing the movie where they kind of call out a little bit about, you know, that the sort of the Western culture viewing her. And she says, like, that didn't really happen. Like, he was a lot nicer to her about that. Like, which I, but it's fine because it represents what happens in the world.
Yeah.
And that is, let me, okay, I know her name, but I don't want to mess it up. Jaya Sailua.
Jaya Sailua. Oh, thank you so much for that.
You're very welcome.
Too amazing. It's so interesting because, like I said, I think Marilyn could have benefited from some of Jaya's counsel.
Right.
Really, really interesting. Like, but you gotta find
the difference is that Jaya had so much love and support growing up.
Yeah.
In like a culture that supported who she is. Mm-hmm. She's younger than me. She's still around. Marilyn didn't. And I think that's a world of difference.
And also, but that's the thing that as you get older, you have to, if you don't have it, you have to give it to yourself.
Yeah.
And that's whenever I think about Marilyn Monroe makes me just sad when I think about her. Like, and I just like, oh, she just needed a hug and she really needed to get to that point. Cause she died when she's like 36.
Yeah. No.
Like, get to that point where she could love herself enough because she wasn't getting it from other people.
Yeah. But, she wasn't. Not really.
Yeah. Self-love is. That's very, very important. Not arrogance, not self-centeredness, but self-love. Like, love yourself enough to rest when you have to.
It's the most important love, honestly.
Yep.
You'll be kinder to others. I know I'm kinder to others. Tell you that right now.
Yep. You know, and so if you hear that, listeners, be kind to yourselves and get some rest. So on that note, we're going to wrap it up for another episode of Notorious Women Podcast. Again, remember to follow us on all the things, like and subscribe on all the platforms, especially Apple, that helps people find us, but also on Spotify. And Miriam, and I always say this, copy the link and send it to your friend. Copy the link and send it to your friend.
Thank you.
Thank you for continuing to support us. And Miriam, where else can they find us? Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, more.
I'm so sorry about all over the place. Patreon.
That's what
if
I
you want
you
to
said.
Support the show with money,
please,
some cash.
Are we begging?
You can do that at patreon.com/notorious women, and that's patreon.com/notorious women. Now, Miriam, I promise I'm going to kick it to you.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
We are on all the things at Notorious Women Podcast. So TikTok, Instagram. I'm on Instagram all the time. Come talk to me. Lovetta's there too sometimes. You can ask for her. She'll come out.
Yes, I will.
And YouTube, Notorious Women Podcast. Super simple. You can email us at notoriouswmpod@gmail.com. I would like to also point out that we are a featured podcast in Amazon Music for Women's Month. Okay. I just wanted to share that because I'm bragging. That's what that is. And that is a wrap. That is all.
Yay. All right, guys. We will see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Produced by Atavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.